For the News and Observer, I'm Dawn Vaughn, Capitol Bureau Chief and host of Under the Dome, and you're listening to this latest episode for the week of March 18th, 2024. I hope everyone had a lucky St. Patrick's Day. May the road rise to meet you and all of that. I'm joined today by my Capitol Bureau Chief counterpart, Colin Campbell, who I assume all our listeners know since she used to work here at one point, was on this podcast for a long time, and then as a guest, and of course, have your own.
Yeah, great to be back in my home newsroom.
So we're going to talk about, we're a month out of the legislative session, but it's never too early to start thinking about it, and how the primary is going to change the way things are coming this past week. So people are listening to this on Monday. This past week was the monthly no vote session where Speaker Moore and Senate Leader Berger will come sometimes basically when they feel like it to preside. Basically, I think just to say hi to the press corps.
We're always so excited to see them.
Berger was not around this week. He's probably paying attention to some other like a primary election results in his district, not his own race, of course. But Moore was there and talked to us kind of off the cuff, really, about what he expects this legislative session. So it's, if you don't know just the kind of the cadence of sessions, this is the short session. It starts April 24th. When they actually do the work, we'll see. And theoretically, it would end with the fiscal year, June 30th. But we've all heard that story before. Here's some of the gaggle with Moore, and you'll hear my voice at the beginning and the laughter of other reporters when I ask him about he and Berger and what they're actually on the same page about. So here's that.
We are, and that is to keep it short. We really are, okay. But and which is
believe it when I see it.
Look, hope springs eternal, right? And you just never know. No, we are. Yeah, we're going to try to keep it short. And so much of our budget this year really moved and thought forward for the second year where we're in a good position. There, we all know, y'all have touched on several of the unresolved issues that are left over. I don't know which of those we'll deal with. We really need to go back to the caucus and see, but kind of where we were last session at the end of session when we adjourned, where the caucus was on it. And so I don't know if anything will change. I don't know what'll happen. So there's not a lot of conversation. Of course, bear in mind, folks are just kind of getting through primaries right now. So it's just folks are really interested more in that. So, but I imagine the coming weeks there'll be some conversation.
So the reason we laughed and I said believe it when I see it is because very, very rarely are they actually out by June 30th.
You say this every single year.
And we fall for it every single year.
I know, I'm always like, well, if I just plan my vacation for mid-July, surely they'll be gone by then. And they never are.
Yeah. There are so many times because my family always goes to the beach at the end of June where I was so worried about missing the budget and I didn't. And then a couple months later thinking, oh, can I leave town again? Is something going to happen? And I have missed stuff here and there, but you can't, if you plan your whole life around the General Assembly, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, you're not going to be taking many vacations because there's just so much uncertainty in when they come to town, how long they stay, what are they doing when.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Moore, though, because he controls so much of the calendar, he and Berger together. And I mean, if Gary Robertson, our Associated Press colleague, I think his very first question for Moore was asking again, even though we've all asked, you're sticking around for the session, right?
Yeah, because I think there was a lot of wondering, you know, since more or less he was in a district that for Congress that was pretty well drawn to be his district. It was drawn to be a very Republican district. So by the fact that he overwhelmingly won his primary, he's pretty much guaranteed a seat in Congress. Like he's already, you know, probably going up to D.C. and picking out his office at this point. So the question was whether he'd stick around and do one last short session. And he says that he will, but I do wonder how much does that play into how long does the session run? I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to campaign for the November election because it's kind of a foregone conclusion, but certainly there's probably a lot of like prep he wants to do. Maybe he's going to be feeling some senioritis, like a high schooler that's just about to graduate and go to college and not necessarily want to spend as much time in Raleigh as we've seen in past years, but you never know. I mean, that's perhaps the optimist in me thinking that.
He's not like really as into the budget as Berger, I don't think. I think Berger really likes it. Berger likes talk. Like I asked more question on taxes and I mean, he had an answer, but Berger is more of the tax guy, I think, and more likes to say, well, he talked about inflation and obviously what can the state do with that? I mean, tax cuts. And I said, do you mean raises for teachers and state employees? And he said, oh, yeah, like they want to give additional raises. So.
Yeah, because I mean, we've got the 3% raise baked in. I do think that creates a little bit less pressure to get to a budget deal. The fact that we do have income tax cuts scheduled to take effect again at the beginning of next year. You've got that 3% raise for most state employees as well as raises for teachers. And so if we have a situation like we had last year where some outside issue like casinos or something else gets tied to the budget, I think that's sort of a situation where maybe there's less of a impetus to come to an agreement because you already have, you know, some level of budget in place for the next fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. So in that clip that you all heard earlier, Moore is referencing that reporters had just asked about unresolved issues. And it seemed like there was a medical marijuana possibly, but I mean, he didn't seem to rule it out. But I mean, I guess they really just haven't had conversations with each other yet.
They're all been focused on their primaries and in their districts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to get all, you know, 72 members of the House Republican caucus together is kind of a challenge. So my guess is that's probably not going to happen until like, you know, maybe a couple weeks out from session at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it remains to be seen. Do some of the people who were like sticks in the mud about things like medical marijuana, are they more willing to wheel and deal after the primary, knowing that they no longer have someone who's going to come at them from a more conservative, further to the right standpoint and criticize them for a vote for something like medical marijuana? I think the Senate, as best I can tell, is going to put the pressure on for that bill to get it moving in the House that, you know, maybe, your bills ain't going to pass the Senate if there's not some level of movement on medical marijuana, because that's something that Senate Rules Chairman Bill Rabin has been pushing hard for on that side. And then you've got, you know, the sort of related to that, the House's proposal to further regulate hemp products, things with THC in them, that stalled in the Senate. So I asked more like, is there a chance of some sort of deal where you put both of those things together and you can get the momentum to pass it? And he kind of, you know, hedged and didn't really give us an answer on that.
I mean, he did like pretty much, and they said this before, but we've learned as politics reporters that you need to ask the same question multiple times over time to politicians, because the answer isn't always the same. Berger is very good at not saying something definitive. Like his full quotes are also the, well, and if there, and so he leaves an open door and isn't as definitive as Moore will say something definitive, it seems, but we just ask again and again.
And it often changes from time to time because Moore, I think, doesn't necessarily prep for these press gaggles as much as I think Berger probably does in terms of making sure that he knows what questions are going to come up and how much information he's willing to give the media in these kind of informal settings.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're both, you know, they're both comfortable with saying, well, I don't know right now, or I'll go talk to the caucus or whatever. How do you think that Berger and Moore's relationship is going to be different? Because your whole time at the legislature, it's been them.
My first session was 2015, and it was right after Tim Moore took over for Tom Tillis after he graduated to go be a U.S. senator. And so I do wonder, you know, does this give Berger more of the cards because he's going to be around next year? Or do you see Moore sort of trying to get things that he cares about across the finish line because he knows he's not going to be around to do it next year? It's going to be most likely the Rules Chairman Dustin Hall stepping up into that role. So I think it'd go a couple different ways, but I think Berger probably has the upper hand in a lot of negotiations.
You think it'll still end up being Hall, even though like with the way things in the primary and the general might be? I mean, they obviously Republicans, assuming they still have control, which it looks like they're going to, still have to continue to agree that they want Dustin Hall as speaker.
Yeah, he seems to be the choice of sort of the establishment Tim Moore wing of the Republican caucus. The fact that you had a few more sort of non-establishment candidates win their Republican primaries for the state House could probably be a few more votes in Keith Kidwell, the House Freedom Caucus chairman's column. As far as I know, he's still running for speaker. So that'll be one to watch. But I think Dustin Hall is probably still the favorite.
Mm-hmm. There were some surprises in the primary, in the Republican primary, though. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're still going to talk about what the General Assembly and the vibe post-primary is going to be, including the other side of the aisle and what's going on with the Democrats, plus our picks for headliner of the week. We'll be right back. You're listening to Under the Dome. I'm Capitol Bureau Chief Don Vaughn here with WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief Colin Campbell. Before the break, we are talking about how the primary is going to impact the legislative short session, primarily, pun not intended, I guess, because Speaker Moore is a short timer now, and how that's going to be since he obviously has total control of House Republicans, more or less, maybe not when there's always the votes on certain issues. So we're going to talk about Democrats now, and their primaries were interesting in a different way. Republicans, not really in the House as much, but other races like a council of state and surprises in the primary there, like, you know, House Republican. And I think he went down to deputy majority whip, but it was majority whip John Hardister lost his labor commissioner primary to Luke Farley, who's the Trump wing of the party. So we'll see how that influence changes. But on the Democratic side, the more moderate Democrats who got all the attention until Tricia Cotham switched parties, and then suddenly there is like no spotlight to be found on them anymore, it circled back in the primary with Brockman, who it looks like squeaked out a win.
Just barely, it looks like. I think he's just outside of recount territory, but that could have changed in the final tallies. The county canvass is occurring Friday throughout the state.
And then Ray. So you just saw something as we record this on Friday going on with Ray's race.
Yeah. So Michael Ray, one of the most, I guess, moderate Democrats in the House. If you look at his voting record, he has a higher percentage of votes with Republicans on things like charter schools and the budget and things like that. Had a really strong challenge from a social studies teacher named Rodney Pierce in the primary. And Pierce got a lot of support from young Democrats and some other left-leaning groups that wanted to see him defeat Ray and provide perhaps a more reliable vote for the Democratic Party agenda in the House. Pierce ended up winning by about 40 votes, which is within the margin for a recount. So I was waiting to see a recount request come through. And instead, Friday morning, there was this press release from a law firm representing Rodney Pierce that's going to be highlighting the fact that Ray has filed some protest about individual voters' eligibility, what kind of ballots they were given. So he's sort of taking a different tact than just simply requesting a recount. He's looking at problems with how the election occurred, or at least what he perceives to be problems, whereas Pierce's camp is just calling on him to like stop messing around and concede. So this is going to be one to watch probably for a while. This may end up in the courts before we know for sure which of these two men win the primary there.
And even after session starts, I guess, right?
Potentially. I mean, obviously, Ray would be serving through the end of the year anyway, but certainly we may not know for at least a few weeks, maybe even months, which of these two candidates wins if there's a lot of legal stuff going on.
What's it been like on past short sessions? Like, how's the vibe different when people that choose to leave? So Republican Senator Jim Perry is not running again. It's just not the time for him to continue in office. So obviously he's here this whole year. Democrat Senator Mary Wills Boddy is not going to run again. Maybe we'll see her again later. But that's a lot different than a Brockman with what he thinks of the rest of the Democratic caucus right now and how he's been treated and where things are with Michael Ray. Or I don't know, or Hardister, or anyone else that's leaving. Does that show up, do you think, on just the way they talk to each other on the floor committee, or are we not really going to see it play out publicly?
I think if anything, it's sort of behind the scenes, because most of these people, like, they're not completely done with politics. Jim Perry is leaving for now because he's got some family situations mm-hmm. he's got to deal with. He's somebody who you might see pop up in a few years. The same with a lot of these people who lose a very close primary or general election, they come back. I mean, one of the closest races in November is going to be a rematch between former Representative Howard Hunter, a Democrat in the northeastern corner of the state, and Bill Ward, who beat him 2 years ago. So a lot of these people are sort of recognizing that they're gone, but not forever. And there's a lot of sort of recurring politics. I do wonder with their attendance records, if that changes a little bit, that they're, you know, get a little bit of that senioritis and they're not necessarily going to show up to every single vote. And if you have some close votes, particularly on like a veto override, does that matter?
Is it Joe Sam Queen, the Mountain District, where it's like these different lawmakers will just take turns?
Yeah, Joe Sam Queen and Mike Clampett, who's the Republican. And yeah. I don't think they're together on the ballot this year, but for several cycles, I think we had four or five different rematches between these same two guys.
So even if you're leaving at the end of the year, like a lot of people, you might as well act that you're coming back, because if it's not next year, maybe another time, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see that this year, one of the people who won their primary is former Republican Representative John Blust of Greensboro. He's been gone for, I think, two or three sessions now, but saw an opening where another Republican was retiring, jumped back in, won his primary, is probably going to be the newest representative from Guilford County.
And some people like getting appointed to stuff too, so we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. Some sort of obscure state office that pays particularly well, they end up there.
All right, well, let's move on to our picks for headliner of the week. Yours is voter related, so why don't you go first?
Yeah, so my headliner of the week is the solo libertarian voter in Terrell County, which is the one of the smallest counties in the state. It's close to, it's kind of on your way to the Outer Banks. They had only one person vote in the libertarian primary there, which means we get to know who they voted for because that shows up in the election results. Mm-hmm. And the one vote in the libertarian primary was cast for a candidate whose name was Toad Anderson. T-O-A-D, like frog and toad.
Like a real person.
A real person, presumably, although I Googled him and couldn't find a whole lot of information.
Was the, I guess, like, who was... Was it him voting for himself?
Possibly. Or someone on Twitter commented that it might be like Frog voting for his friend and Toad.
That's great. So speaking of candidates that, you know, don't succeed, unfortunately, that's just the statistics for libertarians. No offense, libertarians. Man, basketball, the ACC tournament, we're recording this, you know, Friday, so I don't know what the rest of the tournament will turn out. But Virginia Tech lost. Duke lost, UVA won, and hopefully will lose Friday night as we're, recording this beforehand. But
hey, now that's my number two team behind UNC. My hometown is UVA territory.
I know. When you're from Charlottesville. So, yeah, Virginia, North Carolina crossover. Yeah, it's just been kind of a dismal basketball season from my perspective so far. So hopefully the actual big tournament will be better or more interesting. I feel like it's never not interesting, so it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I wonder if any with the lack of excitement around ACC, if the proverbial TV on a cart ever showed up in any classrooms in North Carolina. I grew up going to schools like two blocks from UVA, and that never happened. So that must be a distinctly North Carolina thing. I don't know if when you were growing up in Virginia, that was a similar occurrence or not.
No, not at all. I mean, Northern Virginia, it was all about professional leagues, not college anyway. But it was, yeah, just nothing at all. And also, my kid is in high school, and his report was that one class, they finished something toward the end and could look at their phone. So he watched the game and he watched it during lunch. And one of his friends said the teachers didn't let them watch anything at all. And I'm like, what is happening? What has happened in North Carolina?
I know. Yeah. Not the love for basketball, just not what it used to be, I guess.
Yeah, it's a shame. So, all right. Well, on that note, well, hopefully March Madness will bring some other surprises. And of course, the political world is always. So I'd like to thank Colleen Campbell, my Capital Bureau Chief Opposition, but also colleague.
Yeah, great to have a meeting of the chiefs.
We always say we need Laura Leslie,
yeah,
too,
RNL's chief. Yeah, and then Jeff Tiberi, the Capital Bureau Chief Emeritus from WUNC.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening for the News and Observer. We'll talk to you next time.
For more from our politics team, subscribe to the News and Observer at newsobserver.com/subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Under the Dome and NC Insider, and sign up for our weekly political newsletter, also called Under the Dome, at newsobserver.com/newsletters. Thanks for listening.